Hey there, welcome back to Crosshairs Radio. This is episode 25 of the podcast, but also episode number one of our membership and part of the Wide Angle Podium Network. That's something we're pretty stoked to be a part of. It is a group of similar podcasts that have joined together to create this podcast network. Shows that you may know, like the Slow Ride podcast, Kids Don't Follow podcast. That's the other podcast that I am associated with, that we talk about music, and then also the Working Man's Honest Bicycle program. Really excited for this new opportunity. It's a good chance for us as podcasts to bond together and create this community, and there are going to be some other shows that come on board as well. And then it's also an opportunity for all of you and hopefully a growing crowd of folks to have all these podcasts that have a similar vibe to them, a similar ethos, and you will be able to find them all in one place. So go to wideanglepodium.com, go check it out. You know, there's an opportunity to join the network, to be a part of it, to donate, and we'd love for folks to do that as well. So this is it. Episode number one of Crosshairs Radio on Wide Angle Podium. And also episode 25. On today's show, we have Gavin Haley. You may know Gavin. He was a pro cyclocross rider this year for Giant Bikes. Also always at the top of the field in his junior days, going to Belgium for long stretches of time, racing over there, racing for the U.S. team. And a really interesting story. You know, he's not just focused on cyclocross and on bikes, as you'll see, and he's got an interesting tale to tell, and we will get into that in full in a second. Been away for about a month. Happy to get back onto these shows. Going to start doing them regularly again. Go to cxhairs.com. Go check out everything I've got going on there. Also at cxhairs on Instagram and on Twitter. And let's get into it with Gavin Haley. So hey, Gavin, how's it going?
Doing well, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. So this is a Crosshairs Radio episode I wanted to do for a while, just to talk to you. You know, you've been great with contributing to CXHairs, and you know, we've talked many times in the past, but you've had a couple things happen that I want to save for the end, that I think makes now just a perfect time to have this discussion.
Yeah, of course. I mean, actually, we've been talking about getting on this for a while now, so it's good to actually finally be on here. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, so let's even go back, just for people who may not know, you know, who aren't familiar with who you are and your racing, and just get into it from the beginning. I mean, when did you start riding bikes, and where were you at that time?
Oh man, gosh, started riding when I was like, it depends, because you know, people have these stories like, oh, I was riding, you know, when I was three, but it's like, no one's actually like, you know, riding. I've always loved bikes since I was really young, and just mountain bikes, and actually raced dirt bikes for a bit, but I really started riding when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and then that turned into some serious training when I was about 14, and then now, gosh, I'm turning 19 next week, so spend most of my life just riding, and then the last 4 to 5 years super serious racing. So
talk to me a little, just sort of backtracking into the whole dirt bike thing, because I always find that as a fascinating discipline. Yeah. And it also is something I think really works well for people as in cyclocross with the handling aspect.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, most people who haven't done dirt biking don't really understand why it would make you technically better, but essentially you're on a bike that is like 10 times the weight of the one you're currently on, actually more than that. And it's like, you're going over jumps, you know, you're going in and out of corners at a much quicker speed. It's just a lot more intense. And so when you get put on a 15-pound cyclocross bike, it's like, oh, this is nothing. You know, it definitely takes some getting used to, but motocross just definitely gave you a shape that allowed you to to really just cross over very well, because you may not have had the cardio side of things, but you had everything else dialed. So it definitely, I think, directly relates to cyclocross in a lot of ways, just about you going around the same track over and over and over, and just very similar stuff like that.
Yeah, I look at somebody like Jan de Nulawara, who I know came up in it, and now, you know, and then made the switch over to bikes.
Exactly, and you still see that guy, man. I mean, look at his arms. Like, most cyclists, like Sven even did some dirt biking, maybe not so competitive, but like he did it, and he definitely changed his body to be a cyclist. But Jan, like, that guy still looks like he freaking bodybuilds, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think he's starting to get back into it too. He did a little feature with one of the motocross sites in Belgium, and I think he's been I think he just rides all the time still.
Yeah, it's sick. I mean, it's definitely something that's it comes with a lot of injuries if you get to a level, but if you're just doing it, you know, as a hobby, it's probably one of the most fun things in the world, man.
From that, you know, getting into actually racing, when did you first start racing your bicycle? And then also, when did you feel like, hey, this is something fun and something I want to pursue?
It never really felt like I was making a decision, Bill. It was almost like, it was just something, you know, like I always rode my mountain bikes. And then one week my dad was like, hey, man, there's this thing called cyclocross. Do you want to go try it out? We'll put some skinny tires on your bike and, you know, we'll see how you do. And it was like from there, like I just raced. And I was like, whoa, this is really fun, you know. And I was lucky enough to come from a place where a junior development team was formed. That actually went on to be one of the biggest junior programs ever. It just actually recently ended. But it was something where I just was doing it with all these friends.
And that was Louisville, right?
Yeah. I came from Louisville. I rode for a team called Red Zone Cycling. Lots of adults contributed, my dad and close friends, McShane's included. And it was like, it was something where, you know, you're growing up with your friends racing. And then it was probably when I was like maybe 14, you know, I went to a few nationals, and then it was a nationals where I almost won. And I was like, whoa, like, that was pretty cool. Maybe I can actually win one of these one day, you know? And from there, it's like everyone was getting bigger. And it was probably when I was 15 years old, like, I was like, man, I think I could actually do something with this, you know? Maybe I can make it my job one day. So probably when I was 15 is when it crossed over.
And from that time on, even when you got, you know, later into your teens, what I always liked is that you were one of these guys who really embraced the European side of racing once you started taking this seriously. And that's something that you pursued, in that you felt like that's where you needed to be to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing I didn't mention, but it was like, which is like the biggest part of my cycling, was like when I turned 16, I was now able to go over and race in Europe with the 17-18 category. And it was like, I had always watched that and dreamed of going over there and doing these races. I mean, you just look at races like Namur and Zolder and have these insane drops. And it's like, I kind of questioned like why I would watch the races back home and people would be flying here, but then they would go over there and not do well. And I was really interested. I was like, so I talked to a lot of guys about it, and they're like, man, you just need to go over there and see for yourself why it's different. And I always had the mentality like, whatever these people are saying, I can't ride top 20. Well, I'm going to go ride top 10 now. Like, why can't I do that, you know? And so I made it definitely the biggest priority of my junior years to go over there and see what was about it. And I actually was lucky enough to be able to live there for a while. And then that was when I found out, like, really what made Europe hard. So, yeah, it was definitely a big part of cycling for me.
It is interesting though, because you're doing it when you're 16, so you don't have like a ton of years already in the U.S. domestic cycling history. So it's not like you get these guys in their 20s who go over there and it's complete culture shock. But you're going in there with only a couple years racing in the U.S., still a kid. So it's got to be like, you know, you have to be a little, probably were a little more accepting of it from that standpoint.
Oh, wait, yeah, and of course, and I honestly think that makes it easier, because what happens here is I just did my first last year as an elite in the U.S., and I didn't find myself at the front of many races, but I could still tell that all the races were a similar manner. They go as hard as they can for the first lap and a half, and then they just play around, you know? And I think what happens with most U.S. elite guys is they go over there and they've done that for so long that they can't adjust to literally going every lap, new sections, like whatever, different corners, just hitting it pinned every lap. And going over as a junior, it was just like, oh, this is your first time here, you know. And I think juniors in America do a better job at racing aggressive than the elites do, you know, because it's just like when you're kids, you're super hyper, you're just going as hard as you can the whole time. And that actually crossed over really well to European racing.
You also were, you know, you had an interest in the culture and also learning the language, which I think is a little different. What was your relationship with USA Cycling? And then how are you able to find sort of a host home on your own to sort of go beyond what maybe the USA Cycling program was offering?
Yeah, so my first year as a junior, obviously Jeff Proctor has the Eurocross camp, which is just huge, man. I mean, that's literally helped so many people, just given the opportunity to go over there and race. But I knew that Eurocross camp was in the late winter, and so I was like, okay, if I'm going to be chosen for Worlds and my opportunity to do it is at this Eurocross camp, I want to be able to go over before then so I know what I'm getting into. In my first year as a junior, 17-18, I went over in October with my coach, Matt Wyke, and his son, Josie Wyke, who was my teammate at the time. And we stayed for a month and did, I think, 8 or 9 races. And during that time, we were lucky enough to meet somebody named Tom Sagers, who helped us in the pits, literally did everything for us at the races. And I came back later that winter for Eurocross camp, had a great trip, and was lucky enough to get selected for Worlds. And I was like, hey, Tom, the guy who I had met in October, I was like, do you mind if I stay at your house for a few days to kind of get over this jet lag? So when I meet USA Cycling for Worlds, I mean, I won't have any excuses. You know, I'll be finally ready for this. And during that time, I actually had a pretty bad crash and was put in the hospital for a while. And I collapsed a lung, and I actually stayed with Tom Sagers for his family for 2 months, I think. And so it was like kind of a super traumatic event, but in a way, I mean, that allowed me to grow a relationship with them, and then the next year stay with them.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, so that definitely was an odd way to build that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you never know how things are going to happen, man. Yeah. It's like 1 minute I'm training for world championships, you know, and the next minute I'm in a hospital, and it's like, oh, by the way, you can't take an airplane home because your lung will re-collapse, so you have to find a place to stay. And it was like, it was interesting, though, because I was put in the house and I just heard Dutch every minute of the day. And it was like, I was like, well, you know, this sucks that I can't go home. But, you know, it's really awesome that I'm put with a family who's super amazing. And yeah, man, Dutch was just something I was like, well, I feel like if I can maybe try and learn some of this, maybe I'll get some respect from the riders. And that's the big thing in racing over there is they just don't respect the Americans. So people think, oh, it's just super aggressive, we're getting crashed out. Well, it's like, no, they crash you out on purpose, dude. It's like, so I was like, maybe if I can learn some of the language, I'll get some respect. And then I found out that it was something I really wanted to do. And yeah, so Dutch was definitely a big part of, yeah, racing over there for me.
Yeah. And also being over there, I think you had said when we talked in the past that you were able to make friends in that group,
oh, yeah,
group of juniors, and that helped as well. So once they knew who you were, they didn't, yeah, see you as somebody who was just gonna maybe crash them out, so they were possibly, you know, pushing you into the barriers early, yeah, into the race, where you were able to gain that respect and race,
which was so cool, man, because you find out how small of a country Belgium really is, and maybe the furthest guy who lives away is only 50-60k. So I would actually be training with my competitors once, twice a week. And then you're at the races, man, and you're all just friends, you know. There's that, it's really special to be part of that top percent of a race. Like, who knows, we're all going to be kicking, like, our asses to, like, try and win this race, you know. But at the same time, you have an extreme amount of respect for them.
Yeah, it's something that I always it sort of try to explain to people that it's like, even though it is the best in the world, even though we look at it and should, like this, you know, major league sport, it's like a local series almost.
Exactly. I mean,
everybody's right there.
It really is. It's local series with more screaming fans than you'll ever see anywhere. You know, like, it was like, it was so cool because it's like, oh, well, the race is kind of far away today, maybe 45-minute drive. And I'm right. Like, what? Like, I'm like, that's nothing. Like, my local races back home are 2 hours away, you know? So It was super sick because you're able to race these courses, the best courses in the world, week in and week out with the same people and only drive a short amount of time and just get the most quality racing in the world, I think. And yeah, I mean, you find out being over there. I think we talked about this earlier as well, as like, it's not just the racing, because I love USA Cycling and everything they're doing, and it's super helpful. But when you stay in a USA house, man, you know, it's the same thing. You're just with the same people. And I think branching out is what really made racing easier for me, because you no longer have to worry about where you're going to go get groceries or how you're going to ask the police officer in the street how you get to the closest bathroom. Or, you know, it's just like, it's something where it became, I didn't have to stress about my daily activities, so I could actually focus on racing. And that made a huge difference for me. It was just actually adjusting to live over in Europe.
Yeah, and I'm sure having somebody like Tom, you know, and his family there as well made it so much easier, because you didn't have to worry. You know, we hear all these stories about the guy at the parking lot who sort of controls everything, yeah, and not having to deal with that and being pushed, you know, to the farthest spot around, and you know, all of that's taken care of for you.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I can't thank that Tom and his family enough. Like, literally, they're family to me. It's so cool, man. Like, I even in the weekdays, I would go over with his kids to their grandparents' house, and they'd have food ready. Like, I really was able to become part of the family. And then at the races, it was just better, you know. Like, definitely the parking lot issue, but there were some times when they'd be like, "No, you can't park there." So I'd come up and be like, "Hey, we're parking there," and the guy'd be like, "Oh, okay." It's you just got to use some American aggression. Then it's like, "No, we're good enough to park there. That's where we're going."
Nice.
But yeah, it was man. I can't thank them enough. It was definitely so sick to be able to do that.
So I'd imagine too that being on that side of it, as opposed to all of us who are just sort of looking in at especially Belgians and racing and that whole culture, and we try to interpret things that are going on, you're probably seeing it from a different sort of a different viewpoint and maybe understand some of the nuances and politics that go on and racing that sort of are going over, you know, our heads as outsiders.
Oh, 100%. I mean, and I think you guys do an incredible job at capturing some of that, because it's really impossible to know what goes on from Monday to Friday. You know, you guys just see the Sunday and Saturday races where everything's insane. But that's what was hard for me, was like, okay, literally being in Belgium, the training is so terrible. Like, I came from Northern California, some of the best training in the world, and it's like, yo, I just see a bunch of flat roads. And it was like figuring that stuff out. It wasn't just the racing. But yeah, the politics side of things, like somebody will make a comment at a race, and during that whole week, the team will like be telling the rider they can't show up at the next race, or he's like, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. It's just like, just a lot of stuff that goes on between Monday and Friday. And that was a piece I really wanted to write this year that I never got around to. It's just like, it's really easy to make assumptions of this and that when you can only see one section, but the biggest things that are happening are before the races.
Yeah, and it's even like, it seems like all in for cycling, even the stuff, you know, we're just don't even know how to process things like, you know, Femke Van Dressen and the whole, yeah, you know, mechanical fraud and all that kind of stuff. But I'm sure once you're in it that the stakes are so high and the pressure from these families and culture is so much that something like that almost sounds feasible.
No, I definitely I don't want to comment too much on that, just because people I know who know her, and it's like, yeah, man, I mean, the pressure is insanely high. Like, literally, you don't have a choice to stop, because that is your life, you know, like, and I would never take it. I wouldn't take it out of like the possibility of being like that. She didn't know that was in her bike, 100%, because, even Sven, if you look at his supporters, man, they're all people he started with his career with. Maybe they were 40 years old, but then when he started his career, now they're 65 still in his support crew. And it's like, when you start something over there, it's not just about you anymore. It's like, really, the people that you start with as a junior are going to be there 25 years later. So it just, your result means just as much to them as it does to you. So I would never take it out of the possibility of, yeah, what I said earlier. But Yeah. This is crazy.
Yeah, no, and I know you don't want to get into the specifics of that, but that's even, you know, even that cultural thing where I'm like, from me, I'm like, well, maybe it's not a horrible thing she decided not to race anymore because she can have a life, but maybe, you know, it seems like maybe that pressure won't end. It just, it seems,
yeah,
for the rider, it's almost an impossible spot. Not saying that she isn't, or, you know, anybody in that position doesn't have some blame, but yeah, it just seems like,
no,
as you said, it's all in, and it's such a all or nothing culture.
Yeah, I mean, by that point, like, you're so far over the edge. Like, when you have people knowing about a motor and a bike who've never seen a bike race in their life and they're hearing about this, I mean, that was huge, man. I mean, a day after that went out in the news, people who freaking cut hair and stuff knew about it. Like, it was ridiculous. And it's like, I think with that type of publicity, and that had to just be so awful. I mean, obviously, like, that makes sense why she'd step away from the sport, because she would never hear the end of it, even if she didn't know about it, or even if she did, if she tried to come back, I just think that would be awful.
Right. Yeah. Well, all right.
Yeah.
Getting away from that sidetrack.
Yeah. Sorry.
No. I was the one that brought it up. So what I find great about you and your career, and what, you know, we're gonna move into here later on, is that you were able, even at your young age, to achieve something that I think a lot of people work and dream of and never get to, in that, you know, this year coming around, you were able to get a pro contract, and you were able to, you know, we'll talk about other things that may have happened physically and that kind of stuff, but just being able to reach that level and sort of check off that life goal.
Yeah, man, that, like, honestly, it was insane how that all came together. But it was like, it was something, Bill, that, like, people, like, dream of happening, but it was something I just never questioned that it wasn't going to happen. You know, it was like, okay, I'm a junior, 2 years from now I'm going to sign pro with a team, and then this is what's going to happen, and this is what's going to happen. And then, like, when it happened, it was, like, all so surreal. But I think that when it was going on, I was so focused about what I wanted that, like, when it came about, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I'm ready for this. But it was, like, still, like, thinking about it all now, it's just like, whoa, you know? But because, like, you're 16 years old and turning 18 years old, I think that's the dream of every cyclist. Like, you're in your U23 years, and that's possibly the hardest years, because you have to make the transition from small boy racing to professional, which in reality isn't a huge jump, but it's really hard for people to get the support to get to that level. And I was lucky enough to be brought on by Giant, which was, gosh, such a smooth year with them. Like, I can't thank them enough. It was great. Great guys. But, yeah, I was definitely just super stoked when that came about.
And what was that? What was the biggest difference in that transition? I mean, you came into this year, and we talked at Cross Vegas when it still wasn't public, but it was just about to be, that you were sort of meeting up and getting your equipment for Giant, and then making that jump at 19 years old from racing in the elites in local races to going to racing in the elites in UCI races.
You're asking what was the biggest jump from juniors to elites?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, definitely just the consistency of those guys. Probably the biggest thing, to be honest, was just going to new equipment for me. The speed wasn't anything I hadn't felt, but when you're starting behind 80 guys and you're going the same speed and you're getting caught up in corners and stuff like that, like, obviously there's going to be a time gap after the first lap. And it was like, I wasn't surprised by the speed. I was just thinking maybe that I would be able to get through the field easily, or, like, more easy and stuff like that. Like, but I think maybe the biggest surprise for me was just I underestimated how easy it would be to get through the field. And once you get that first UCI point, man, it was just, like, so much better. But it was just found out, like, man, maybe these 30-year-old guys do have a little more cardio than me. Maybe they do have a bit more energy, you know? And that extra 15 minutes is an eternity. Going from 45 minutes to an hour races is, like, feels like you're doing, like, 25 more laps, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's I've heard that from a lot of people that really is the difference maker, that last 15
for
minutes.
For sure, because as a junior, you're racing 45 minutes all out, and if you were to do 46 minutes, you would be toast, you know? And it's like you hit that 45-minute mark in the elite races, and you find out you still have 3 laps left, and it's like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, and also there's no dispensation for being, you know, one of the top juniors even in the world, moving into the elites. It's like, you're
still nobody, you know?
Yeah, you're back here. You know, I talked to Ben Frederick a couple times, who was sort of fighting through that as an elite, but somebody who never had UCI points, was always in that lottery system at the back of the pack, and then having to, you know, work through the year just – fighting through the pack. That was the first 10 minutes of his race.
It was almost like a game, Bill. It was like I looked at the schedule and I'm like, okay, I just did these 3 biggest races on the East Coast. Am I going to go to Wisconsin, or am I going to go to Bill's race in Charm City? Like, what am I, you know, what am I going to, like, am I going to do the race Bill's announcing? Like, what am I going to go to DC the following week? You know, like, what am I going to do? And it was like, you just kind of have to guess, because there's a large amount of guys like me who you said are still elites looking for that points. And it's all a game, because you never know who's going to show up. I went to Charm City thinking it would be a small field, and there was just the same amount of competition as there was as a C1 in Wisconsin. So it was like, that was honestly the most difficult part for me, was just like, just figuring out what races I'm going to do. And when you're there, you know, and you see guys like flipping Ryan Trebon and these guys lining up, you're like, well, this is going to be interesting, but it's just something that you had to definitely fight through. And then I was super stoked that Pan Am's brought on the U23 category this year, because that just made everyone's life easier.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And also, just, you know, one of the things I think you ran up against, you had some physical issues that you were working out while also moving up to the elites this year.
Yeah, that was really rough, because from junior years to come into the elites, I did the perfect training, literally the perfect training. I basically told my road program what I was doing, and we were super flexible with it. I did all the right training, and then about a month before the season started, I was having a lot of health issues, got some blood tests done, and there was some stuff that wasn't right. And then I got that corrected, and right when I was just getting into Prime Fitness, I dislocated my knee in a crash, and I wasn't able to train for 3 weeks. So it was just a lot of stuff I was fighting through, and just back issues, and things kept happening after and after again, and it's like, it's something, it's super touchy, because like, you can't just tell the world, oh, I had another bad race because my back hurts, you know, like, you don't want to do that every race, you just gotta fight through it. But it was definitely difficult knowing when you're lining up week after week that you're not going to have the race you want to, because you're not where you need to be. But when it finally all came together at the end of the year, it was just an amazing feeling.
Yeah. So that, you know, and that sort of leads into where we're heading, but this is something that isn't a contributory factor into what your, you know, next moves in life are. It basically, you were, or now are sort of back to where you were, where you're healthy and, you know, would have been crushing it next year and sort of looking forward to
Yeah, I mean, man, like, my health right now, like, if I would give anything to be 4 months ago and feeling like this, you know, and I think that, but I can't be the only one who's in that situation. I mean, look at that piece Ryan Trebon put out about 2 months ago when he declined a spot for Worlds, you know. It's like, it's not something where you want to complain, but man, at this sport, if you're not 100%, you can be a minute off, and that's nothing, you know. And it was like so difficult, because cycling is just as much mental as it is physical. And it's like, once you start going in that downward spiral, it's really hard to come out of. And it was something I finally got on top of at the end of the year, man. I mean, most people don't know I raced nationals with strep throat and had one of the best rides of the year, but it was just because I was like, you know, dude, I don't even care anymore. I was like, I'm flipping going as hard as I can. I don't care if I can't breathe and my legs hurt. Like, you just at some point, it's just, you have so much passion for this that it's just like, whatever.
Yeah. What did you think of that nationals?
No, it was beautiful. I mean, I was on Twitter a week before, man, and people are like, best course ever. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, what are these people talking about? And then I rode one lap and I was like, nope, that's about right, you know? was like, that, like, what they did with what they had, and I mean, it was just the crowds, everything, man. I mean, they really did an incredible job with that. It's like, applaud, definitely.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Those descents must have been fun too, coming back through that little mountain bike
section. So sick. Yeah. Did you get a chance to ride a lap?
I did. You know, I was going to, and then I had like a dry day, and me and my teammates were out there, and then we were going back, and we were going to pre-ride the next morning, and it was like just started pouring, dude, and I'm not going out there.
The best part of the whole week for me was the morning of the race, and it just rained, and I went out there to that last little descent, man, and I was like, oh, this is a good line. I did that line, man. I fell on my ass 5 seconds later. And it was just the best thing for me, just being, you know, here's this, everyone's saying, oh, Gavin, what line are you going to do? And then 5 seconds later, you're on your butt and they're laughing. It's like, oh, my goodness, man. Like, it's just the amount of being humbled was like, the level of being humbled was like at an all-time high. But it was just like, I was having fun, you know. It was just so, such a great venue. And the people, they were like electric, man. I don't think I've ever done a race, maybe besides in England, where like that final descent, this cheering was insane.
Right. Yeah, no, that
so
was
so amazing.
It was a great environment. So, what people, you know, sort of moving back a little bit, what people may not know about you, the people in the cyclocross and cycling community who have followed your career, is that you also have almost a parallel passion in music. And
yeah.
Producing and creating and writing songs. And let's even move back, sort of like what we did with cycling. And when did that start?
Man, I'm going to be honest. I don't have like this great story. But I mean, every kid when they're young watches these Disney shows, right? I would just always be running around the house, like listening to this and that. And my mother actually put me into piano lessons when I was super young. We did it for a short amount of time, but it was one of those things like, I want to go ride my mountain bike. I don't want to spend an hour a day playing piano. Forget this, you know. But my sister took piano very seriously, my older sister. And so I was constantly growing up listening to her play some incredible pieces. And when I was about 9 years old, like, I started singing a lot. Like, you know, my brother and sisters are constantly telling me to shut up. Like, what are you doing? Like, and then my sister was like, hey, you don't have a bad voice. Let me start, like, helping you out, you know? And, dude, it just kind of took off from there. Like, that was when, I don't know if you know, but, like, a lot of kids my age were doing YouTube videos. And there was actually people, like, at 13 years old already having a career in music just because they were putting their stuff online. And I was, like, looking up to all these kids. But at the same time, it was more of, like, I was just getting really serious into cycling also at that time. So it's like, wow, music is something I can do, and it really just gets me relaxed and I really enjoy it. And it's something that keeps my mind off competing. So it kind of started like that.
But since then it has gotten much more seriously, especially when you all moved to California. So tell me a little bit about that progression just in the last couple years.
So 2 years ago, my dad took a job out here. We're in Napa Valley, just north of San Francisco. By now, like, we kind of fast forwarded like a couple of years, I'm like 16, 17 years old. And I've really liked music, man. Like, started recording in a bit. I was playing out a bit, played a few weddings. And,
so when you're doing that, what do you do? Just you and guitar?
Yeah, guitar and singing. I can play a lot of instruments, but mainly guitar is where I'm most comfortable.
But are you ever playing in any bands, or is this just all solo?
No, man, it was, I wish, you know, like, now watching bands, like, that looks like so much fun, but it was always solo because I didn't, it was one of the same things with cycling, like, I didn't have enough time to be part of a group or something,
right.
So it was like, you know, something I did when I had time, and it was just like, you can do it by yourself, and it's just as fun. So, yeah, basically, exactly 1 year ago, I got like my recording equipment and stuff like that, and I had a few songs written that I'd made in my own time, and I recorded those and I sent those out to, I think, the 5 like biggest management agencies in Los Angeles that showed up.
I'm gonna stop you for a second before you do that, because I'm gonna get into the weeds with you just for
sure.
1 second, because when I was, you know, 16 years old, and in my parents' basement, I had a Tascam 4-track, you know, with a cassette tape. And
I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, you'd record your drum track and then
yeah,
you record,
and you can't,
record
you your, can't do the drums too hard. Or it,
no, yeah, think, yeah. And then you had to like, yeah. You had to bounce everything down to that fourth track if you wanted to do more tracks on top of it. And then it was just sort of set. So what?
That's so sick. I did not know that about you.
So what do you use? What, you know, where has that gone to now?
That
what are you
so
recording
far,
on?
Because like what you're just saying, like, that's why I respect music so much is like the jazz players. If you ever listen to like recorded jazz, like from 10, 15, 20 years ago, none of the music, the drumming is ever very loud because like it would knock that thing off the cassette. It was so sick. But now it's definitely progressed, man. I mean, I have three things. I have a mic plugged into an audio interface, plugs into my computer, dude, and I'm ready to go from there. After that, it's just all editing. You
yeah.
know?
So what program are you using?
I'm in Logic Pro X.
Okay. Yeah. I've been playing around with some of that. I've actually started trying to, for some of the videos I make, trying to make the musical beds on my own. So that's been my project for this off season.
We'll have to talk about that more. I think we're starting to nerd out the listener.
for our cycling podcast.
Yeah, man, for sure. But yeah, so like definitely, I mean, it's like right at your fingertips, man. And the cool thing is like, I can fit all of that stuff in my backpack, bro. You know,
yeah.
And I took that to even the races you saw me at, man. I had music. I'd go to my hotels, and in my off time, I'd be making stuff. So,
no, that's
yeah.
great. So, yeah. So to get back before I sent us off on this tangent, you were sending it out to management companies.
Yeah, I basically got on my computer and I looked up some management agencies in Los Angeles. You know, I live 6 hours from there. And I sent them out. I actually sent out hard copies, which is something people don't really do. You know, I made like my EP, and I got it on a CD. I burned it on a CD, put some pictures in that envelope and stuff, wrote a cover letter, sent it out. And about 2 weeks later, I was like, oh, man, well, that didn't do crap. Like, no one's calling me. I got a call on that day from which is now my management agency called Reload Management. And they're like, hey, man, you know, we really like your stuff. I'd love to introduce you to some producers. What's your genre? Like, what type of music do you listen to? This and that, you know, the basic questions you would get asked in an interview. And that really took off, man. And which was difficult was this all started happening late summer when I'm gearing up for my first season as a pro.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I think that you know, it was interesting talking to you at Cross Vegas because it almost seemed like you were convincing yourself that cycling was what you were going to pursue. But at the same time, you know, you had this other dream out there that, you know, you weren't going to let go.
Yeah. And it's something that even, I guess we're getting into that, was with cycling. I've always had the intention. When I race, I was like, I think I'm gonna stop late 20s, early 30s, and then chase something else. Because what kind of scares me with cycling is if you're not in the top percent, when you stop, you're not covered for life. You know,
right.
You see, like I think I saw a tweet earlier today about I won't throw any names. Like he's an incredible career racer. He's like, it's really hard to be content right now and happy with how everything's going, but then still worry about a future plan, because cycling is, I think, one of the most fun sports in the world. But if you're not Matthew Vanderpool or Wout van Aert or Sven making gazillions of euros, you're not going to be okay when you stop, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely. And it's scary, and it's definitely something that you have to do it for the love of doing it, because there's no job present or future security in it.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, like that could you if I'm not careful on this, you know, that could offend some people. But it was like definitely I started thinking about that a lot, but it was like I didn't really care though, because I was like, dude, I'm a pro, this is so sick. Like I was like, you know, just like I've always wanted to be here. But at the same time, I definitely continued with music, and right before this season started in September, I went down to LA with my older sister named Johnny, and up until now I had always called her my manager before, because she would do all my side stuff. And we went down, and I actually met with this guy who's now my manager, and a couple weeks later signed with them. So that was super sick. But then it was like, oh, okay, I'll see you in like 5 months because I'm going to go race my bike. So it was like really, really, really hard to do that. But it worked out. So
The thing that I find hilarious is that, you know, most people, when they have their fallback plan, it's like go to law school, maybe get a business degree, go find a yours is like maybe the other pie in the sky dream out there that to chase. You're going from like professional athlete to professional musician. You know, it's just but you know, been able to sort of knock down the doors in both, which is just amazing.
Yes, I really appreciate that, man. It's like it is like I said, I'm turning 19 next week and people are like, you're so young, you know, like don't throw all your eggs in one basket. Go to college. Go do this. And it was like, look, I'm not throwing all my eggs in one basket, but I'm not going to go along with what your life story was, you know? Like, I know what I can do. And just because you're saying that I need to go to school and I need to do this, like, that is very important if I want to do certain things. And obviously, I would love to educate myself more in music, but how things are progressing right now. The next step for me is just to keep doing what I'm doing, which we can get into now, whenever's good for you.
But. Yeah. No, I want to know that. And just to the same thing with what people are saying is it's not like you're sitting on your couch doing nothing. You know, that's the difference, is that you're pursuing this. And if you do want to go to college, you always can. That's what I'm always like. I'm like, college is supposed to prepare you for your future and a career. Yeah. Well, if you already got a vision for what that is and things are moving in that direction, then you should,
for sure.
You know.
And people had said the same thing to me about high school. I finished high school, but I finished the last 2 years on my computer, man, because I was in Belgium racing, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't get enough days off of school, so they were like, hey, we're going to have to – you can't go to school here anymore. So then we started homeschooling full time. But yeah, I definitely – school is not out of my head, but right now, the next step for me is actually since Nationals ended and I didn't get an invite to Worlds, which I was talking to my dad the other day about it, and man, I'm still kind of fired up about that. Like I was like, all right, my goal number one as first year U23 is to get an invite to Worlds. And like I said, I got strep throat at Nationals and I did everything I could. I think I ended seventh, which I was pretty happy with. But I didn't get an invite to Worlds, and man, I was just fired up. I came home and started going so crazy hard in my music, and since I've been home, I think I've been to LA like 3 or 4 times, staying there for a week at a time, so I've been there half the time since I've been done the season. Yeah, so just right now, for me, music is... there's a lot of stuff happening, which I can't throw names out of companies right now. I really wish I could. But right now I've been going back and forth to LA doing small projects. Like I am currently doing some stuff with Awesomeness TV, which is a big YouTube channel. But the big part for me, like my career wise, is I'm starting to record music that will actually go somewhere besides YouTube or websites that I can put it on, you know.
Yeah, and that's actually something that I wanted to ask you about, because it is such the paradigm of how music works has changed so much.
It's always changing. I mean, it's never constant. 5 years ago, everyone downloaded from iTunes. You know, no one went out and bought records. And now, as of whenever it was when Apple Music started, now it's all about streaming. People are on Spotify and they're on this and that. It's constantly changing, you know. And that's...
Right.
There's a lot of money in the entertainment industry, but nowadays it's finding out where you can get that. And the music part of things, I was talking to a producer the other day, he was telling me, it was music is just the bread slices in a sandwich, you know, and all the in-betweens are where you really make your living.
So is that why, you know, because it sounds like you're getting pushed into doing stuff on YouTube and everything of that. Is it like monetizing that type of stuff? Is it just all these revenue streams that you have to try to figure out?
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, that's kind of how it is. But right now for me as an 18-year-old singer, the main reason I'm doing stuff with YouTube is to grow my fan base. Last week I was at an event where I was getting interviewed for stuff like that, and all promotion to go towards your social media is constantly gaining me fans. So when I do release the music that I'm making, it will go to a bigger audience than just the followers I have currently.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing too, because it used to be, you know, you would have management and then you would have a record label, and then their job was to introduce you to an audience, where now it seems like you have to bring that to them.
Well, yeah, that's actually funny that you say that, because that is very true. A lot of talent agencies, when you first go to meet them, the first question they ask, well, what is your following? You know, it doesn't matter if you're taking pictures, you're taking selfies, and you have a million followers, they can do something with that, which in a lot of ways is really sad. And it's, I got lucky the way I got picked up, because, man, when I sent out stuff, I think I had like 500 followers. You know, it's just like so little. And I'm lucky enough to have an incredible manager who's really taken care of me. But it's like, yeah, there's some kids who are already touring who can't really do anything, you know? Like, they put up funny videos on the internet, and they're like, oh, damn, I have 3 million followers. What am I going to do with this? And the industry started making these things, like, for these people who make videos on the internet or do funny things, and they just literally go and meet the fans. And what's happening is these people are becoming rappers. They're like, oh, well, now that I have this, maybe I should get into music, but I can't sing, so I'm going to rap. It's like, it's really just a big, big cluster. But
yeah, no, that's, well, I think that you probably have to, you know, feel good about it, that having only 500 followers and they still were interested, means that you actually have some talent, and they liked your songs and they liked the music that you were producing. So that's a good thing. And then, you know, you can, it seems like for a long-term career, that's the way to go, rather than having all these people that liked your funny video on YouTube. And then,
yeah, when you're 15 years old.
Yeah. And then when you got nothing, you can really follow that up with your sort of.
Exactly. Yeah. And I appreciate you saying that, because, like, man, I made my first stuff when I downloaded Logic in my very small laundry room. I put my stuff in there, put some foam behind my mic, and I made this music and then sent it out. And now I'm at the point where I'm being able to record in studios that are worth more than my house, you know? So it's like, it's just insane how fast it's gone.
So when you're in there doing that type of stuff, and you know, if, I don't know what you can get into specifics wise, are you doing guitar stuff? Are you doing vocals, or just vocals, or how are you working with songwriters? What really are you doing?
Yeah,
right now?
So it's kind of a mix of everything you just said. Obviously, when I perform live, I'm going to be playing guitar, but to record a song professionally, they hire, like, or they have their go-tos. So say, like, with a label, the main producer with that label will have connections. Like, he trusts a certain guitar player. So if you're going to play guitar on your track, you're not going to be recording that guitar, because they want it to be 100%, maybe not just 93% perfect, you know? So for me, a big thing for me is, a lot of artists go into, say, a studio or recording an album, and they don't really know what they're doing. They're just singing and, like, hey, producer, you need to make me sound great, even though I sound terrible, you know? And I want to be at the point where I understand a lot about making music, so I can put in my input but still trust these guys. So what I'm doing right now is I'm doing partial writing and mainly vocals, and then it's up to me to play guitar live, but I'm not recording it.
Yeah. I think that, and this is my fault as an interviewer, is that, because I was excited to get to this part, is that we never really...
Oh, man.
Covered.
Don't worry. Just say fast in the tweet. Just be like, fast forward to this minute.
We never really covered the important part of the cycling into music.
This is very true.
A decision or sort of announcement that you made the other day, which is what?
Gosh, man, this is still even hard to talk about, because it's like a part of me that just wants to reverse what I said, you know, but at the same time, it's like I know what I got to do. I made the decision 2 days ago now that I will not be continuing cycling. I'm always going to ride, but I ended my career as a racer, and I'm going to actually be moving to Los Angeles in April to really start getting my music game up, and I'm super excited about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sure that's bittersweet, because as I was saying before, you know, you've sort of reached, you climbed and were successful in these two separate areas that people look at as sort of life dreams, professional athlete, professional musician, and I know this wasn't easy for you. And as I sort of alluded to before, I could see you sort of struggling with that even in September, even when we were talking at Cross Vegas, that I was thinking, this this may be coming sooner than we think that this is going to happen.
Yeah. And that's very, I didn't know that I was that see-through. I didn't know, like, it was definitely something I struggled with, man, because it's super easy when you have two things going for you and one goes bad to merge to the other. But that's what people think happened, and that's not my situation at all, because I think by the end of this, people really understand that cycling was my life, man. You know, like, it really was my life, and it was everything that I wanted to do, and it still is my life, man. I mean, I'm taking my little brother training now. You know, if he gets of age to want to be a pro, I'm going to make that kid a prodigy, you know? But it's like, it's so hard because, like, once you get to the point where you're going to be making money with something, you really got to start thinking about who, like, how you're going to be taken care of after the fact. And when I made I've actually made the decision in Europe before I came home. Something drastic happened with music and I got a big opportunity, and I made the decision, man, after almost a year of thinking about it. But I just do definitely want to get across that this was not an easy decision to make, because I mean, I could get on my bike right now and go race and it and still be competitive, and like, it's something that I love so much, but at the same time I have the exact same drive and passion for music, and I know I can take it somewhere.
Well, I think that's a really important thing to point out, and something that I know in the social media posts that I saw is that you were stressing that you did not burn out on cycling.
Not at all.
This was not like throwing up your hands and quitting, and this was a really difficult decision.
Because that is a big thing you find with juniors, is they do their junior years and they're just done because you literally do so much training that it doesn't become fun. I was lucky enough to have a coach, you know, that he recognized I had some talent, and we did the right amount of training and then in the right way that I wasn't there with, I wasn't tired, you know what I mean? Like, I loved it. Obviously I was training a lot, but I love my bike so much, man. Like, and I think that's the difference between me and most races, is they're doing it because they like racing, but I just love riding. And that's what made this decision like doable, was because I know I can still go ride whenever I want. It just, I don't have the time to travel and do all that stuff with racing if I'm going to be living in Los Angeles and hopefully a year from now touring America. So,
Yeah, absolutely. And that sounds exciting, and, you know, I look forward to seeing the next steps in this new path for you. But I want to, since we're still, you know, on a cycling podcast, I'm going to move back to and pick your brain now, since you're
sort of out of it.
This
isn't about me. What are you I thought this was music.
Hey, look, I have another podcast that we can do all music on. We can do that as well. This is sort of a crossover.
We'll have to talk about your band. We'll have to talk about why I broke up. We'll...
That was many years ago.
Don't call it burnout.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, geez, believe me. If I could do that now. No, but so yeah. So I'm gonna ask you a couple of cyclocross questions, because you follow the sport closely, you know, both domestically and internationally. First off, what do you think? This is gonna be sort of a two-parter. What do you think about Sven taking over Telenet Fedeia, and then also the possibility that Lars Boom may come back and race for him?
Gosh, well, I mean, when you look at what Sven's done, I don't think there's a better person to take over a team at all. I mean, gosh, literally look at what he's done. His talent level, his years of experience, and I think that what he's doing is very smart, because if you look at Telenet Fedeia compared to all the other teams, they have more talent, like youth, than any other team. Sunweb has guys, and they have a lot of 15, 16s, but Sven's taking over a team where they're at an age where they can actually do something with it. You have Ailey, you have all the guys in the Belofta. If you look at the U, sorry, I said Belofta's Dutch for U23. If you look at all the guys in the U23 that he's going to be mentoring, they're going to be winning all the elite races in a few years, like going back and forth with Matthew and Wout. And I think the possibility of Lars coming back would be super cool to watch, because we never really got to see what he could have done fully as an elite, because when he became world champion, I think he went to the road the following year, correct?
Yeah, that's right. He was out of there pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know about that, man, because I thought he was going to crush this year when he had those races on his schedule, but then it didn't go the way he planned. He's like, man, I haven't done this in a long time.
Right.
But I think that would be, from a fan's perspective, but everyone then, would love to see that.
But then Worlds, he came in, and I think he was top 20.
That's very respectable. Yeah. Going a month earlier in that race, he was.
Yeah. You know, of course, he had – it's sort of funny because he was doing, like, the Tour Down Under and then went back and raced Worlds. So, yeah. So, I guess last question just domestically, since you've had an opportunity this past year just on that elite level to race with everybody who's already established and up and coming, what do you see as the future? You know, we've had, like, on the men's side, Powers sort of leading the way, and then Katie Compton on the women's side. Who do you see as the up-and-comers in the next couple years?
Oh, man, I mean, I have to go for my friends here because I think the kids I raced the last 2 years are going to be smoking the elites in 5 years. So it's like, I would definitely say keep an eye out for Gage. Everyone already knows that. But probably the guy I'm most stoked about and who Raleigh made an incredible decision in signing is Lance Hedet. That kid is the most talented kid, if not the most talented kid I've had the chance to ride with. So I would definitely say keep an eye out for him. He was in his first year U23 and already did some incredible results. And if he can get that full hour of racing in, I would definitely say watch out for him. And one more guy would be Spencer Petrov.
All right. So I know you can't give anything specific, but what should we look out for you in the future here? What's the next big milestone?
Next big thing. Be looking out for, I really have to be careful here. I will definitely hope to have my first duet single by late summer. And if all goes well, that will make the radio.
Awesome. And where can people follow you to get up on this? Whoa, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, sorry. So my family just showed up. I hope that makes it in there. That will make that really interesting.
I'll keep it in. But yeah,
there are dying children at my house right now.
just finishing up. Give us all the social media.
Yeah, that basically, just if you want to follow my music, go on my Instagram. It's just Gavin Haley. And then my YouTube channel. If you just enter my name on YouTube, that will come up. But the biggest thing right now is Instagram. And then I'm actually launching my website in the next couple months that I'll be able to put out there.
Great. Sounds good, Gavin. Hey, man, thanks so much for talking. And, you know, I'm stoked for you and good luck with
the. Thank you. Hey, Bill, thank you for everything. Like, not just this interview, but, like, you've done so much for cyclocross. Like, I don't think people would have ever been able to follow as easily if it wasn't for you guys. So thanks for that, man.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for talking. All right. Well, there you have it. That was a pretty cool story. Wish Gavin the best of luck in his music career. Going to keep following along on his progress. Encourage you all to do the same. He's a great, great guy. And, you know, you could just hear that confidence and that motivation that he has and the drive. And I think you can expect to see great things from him going forward. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in for episode 25 of Crosshairs Radio. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, also the first show on Wide Angle Podium Network. Go stop by, check out those other shows. It's wideanglepodium.com. You can also follow them on Twitter as well. We will see you most likely next week. Got some other shows lined up and we'll be talking some more cyclocross. Until then, take it easy, be safe, get in a ride. Stay in school, hug your loved ones, listen to good music, get your face out of your phone, don't spit on the sidewalk.